Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with Vernon Martin of Bakersfield, California. From mules on mountains to gliders and grape vineyards, his experience with the 602nd Field Artillery Battalion during World War II in Europe presented him with more than his fair share of close calls.
Are there any that you shake your head about and say, boy, how did I get through that one?
Yeah, several of those. You don't think about that. If you make it through, you put it out of your mind. Otherwise, you'd probably go nuts.
Well, I think there's something to be said for that. You referenced the glider. We haven't told that story. So here you've trained with all the mules. That's a dangerous enough duty in its own right. Then they tell you you're going to have to fly in this glider. In other words, there's no engine on this thing. The pilot's going to land it. You're not taken back off. And you're going to get out of that thing and fight behind enemy lines.
Twenty miles
behind enemy lines. How did you feel about that when they gave you that scenario?
I'd never been there before, so I didn't know anything about it.
It's like what you said about the Depression, huh? You don't know what you're missing if you don't know it exists?
Yeah. I guess that's the only way that I can figure it. We was down in this grove of trees that I was talking about. All at once, they picked us up, our battalion, and moved it about 15 miles north of Rome. And we got off the trucks there, and they gave us tents. But they also had a landing field scraped out in a big field out there.
Uh-huh.
And there was gliders sitting out there, and there's C-47 tow planes sitting out there. I don't know how many, maybe 30.
Uh-huh.
But they had these stashed all around over. They just have so many in one place. And then we got together after we got in the air.
Did that make you a little nervous, this idea of taking a Jeep and a howitzer and some guys in a powerless airplane?
Well, would it be bragging if I never worried about it?
No, just being honest.
Well, it was different. Let's put it that way. We go out, we take our gun out, and they have a guy on the plane that shows you how to tie your weight down on the glider to keep it balanced.
Right.
Because it's being towed by another plane. And it's got tie-down deals in the floor. You got a 1-inch plywood floor, something like that. And we put that gun in there, and he shows us how to tie it down. And this plane hooks onto us. And on this dirt field, whenever this C-47 takes off, it just tons of dirt and dust comes back. You can't see anything. But anyhow, we was in this glider. This was in training. And it, some way or another, whenever they graded this field out, they put dirt in a hole, and one of the landing gears hit this hole and broke off. And whenever it done that, it left the big old shock sticking in the ground. And whenever the pilot knew what happened, this pilot in the glider, right up above it, there a handle up there, and you just push this handle, and it opens up the tow rope like this, and he cut us loose from the tow plane. And when he done that, we just went around in a circle with that deal sticking in the ground. I scared us to death.
That's like a Disneyland ride or something. But he might have saved your life by cutting you loose.
Well, we probably wouldn't have. Well, yeah, if he'd got us up in the air and we didn't have a landing gear on one side and we hit the ground 100 miles an hour, they ain't no telling what had happened.
Yeah.
But they never got us off the ground. The C-47 might not have ever been able to get us off the ground.
Because of that shock stuck in the ground?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So tell me about when you actually made that glider mission.
We flew across the Mediterranean. I don't know how many gliders it was in the bunch that I was. Probably 40 gliders or 50 being pulled before C-47, but everybody took the door off the glider and just threw them out, just dropped them. The whole line of gliders, all their doors were floating down to the ocean. I don't know who gave the orders to take the doors off the gliders. They knew they never was going to use them again because they just pushed them up in a pile and set them on fire. Anyhow, it was, well, not scary because we'd already rode in gliders and everything, but then we got to the French coast. And then we went inland, and it's a Canadian, American-Canadian outfit. their infantry.
Uh-huh.
They'd landed before us and secured the field.
Yeah, that was the 1st Special Service Force, also known as the Devil's Brigade, recent recipients of the Congressional Gold Medal. And there have even been movies made about the Devil's Brigade. And you spent a fair amount of time operating in conjunction with them.
But all these gliders coming in, this vineyard that we landed in, several gliders landed there. But then there's some great big, on the hill over here, there's great big pine trees. And some of these gliders, they go over there and run out of airspeed, and they just drop down through those trees. But one of the pilots up there in front said, we turned and still had enough speed, but we was heading for this big double road of like cottonwood trees that went down a road. And this one pilot said, no, go up the field. Which he did. We landed in these grape vineyards with all, like I said, with steel posts and all that. And
yeah, so what happened to your glider?
Well, it didn't have no bottom left in it.
Got sliced right off like a cheese slicer.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, there was like 8 men in there, 4 on each side, and we sitting in these wooden benches, and we had a seatbelt on. We had her feet up on the gun. The gun never fell out or anything like that, but it tore the boards and all that stuff up. These iron posts did.
Uh-huh. So that doesn't sound like a smooth landing.
No.
What did it feel like?
Well, you hit the ground like, I don't know how fast we're going, say 60 miles an hour, and you run from here to that tree out there. It's a pretty sudden stop. The skis on the glider were gathering these wires up that the vines ran on.
Right.
And the posts were tearing the bottom of the glider out.
Were you kind of wondering if you guys were going to survive that landing?
No.
It wasn't that bad, huh?
Well, it happens so fast, you don't have time to plan anything.
Uh-huh.
You're just flying in, and all at once, you go over and make a circle around over these trees and come back in, and you're going toward these big double row of cottonwood trees, and somebody had enough sense to turn the plane up the field, which we had more room. And then you run 50 feet, and you're dead stop. I happened to, like I told you, I had these side cutters. So I got under the glider because all this wiring, to hold the vines up on these rows of grape had gathered up on the the deals and the wheels. So I got under there with these side cuts and started cutting the wires off. So you couldn't raise the front of it up to get the gun out of it until all those wires were cut off.
So you guys have this weapon you're supposed to use, but no one's going to be able to use it because you can't get it out of the glider.
That's right.
So, and why did you have these side cutters?
I have no idea. Someplace I picked them up and had them in my deal. I don't know what it was.
So if you hadn't done that, you guys wouldn't have really had any way to defend yourself if there were enemy in the area.
Well, we had our sidearms and all that.
Right.
And we also had infantry there with us, too. You didn't have really anything to worry about. There was nobody going to bother you. The Germans couldn't get through these people are guarding our field that we didn't land in.
But outside of that field, it's all German-held territory because you're 20 miles behind the lines.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of fighting from that point till the end of the war.
But the Germans had begun to give up. They just more or less fought defensively. Oh, a few times they let us know they didn't like us.
What was it like to come back and see your wife again?
I had a hard time getting back. We landed in New York City. It was on Christmas Day, and then we got on a train, went down to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. They had Christmas all set up for us. They started processing us, and then they put us on a train, and I ended up in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And then it took a day or so to get my discharge there. On a bus, you had to go to Muskogee, get off that bus, and then go to Tahlequah. And then my wife was 9 miles out of Tahlequah on a farm. So I got to this bus station there in Fort Smith, and a guy said, well, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to Muskogee. And he said, well, I'm going to Muskogee, too. He had a car. And he said, I'll take you there. And I said, well, how much? And he said, $6. And he took us to Muskogee. Then it was maybe an hour before that bus went to Tahlequah. And a guy said, well, where are you going? A taxi drove up. And I told him, well, I'm on my way to Tahlequah as soon as this bus comes in. So he took me to Tahlequah. And I got in there. It was about 11 o'clock at night. This bus that I was waiting on there in Muskogee was the one that's going to come through Tahlequah and then take me on out to where my wife was. So there's a taxi cab there. So I asked him, how much did he take me out 12 miles from Eldon, Oklahoma? And I don't know, it's like $5, $6, $7. I give him that money. In other words, three different rides to get out to where my wife was. Well, she'd been waiting on the bus, her and her sister, whenever the first bus come through and I wasn't on it. They went back out there and they was all in bed when I got there. Well, the lights went on. And so I went in, and that was whenever I first saw my wife after being gone over two years.
You'd been gone from her longer than you'd been married to her before you left.
Oh, yeah, three times as long.
Yeah.
It was like meeting a strange woman again, if you've ever knew how that was. Everybody got up, and we sat there for a long time and talked, and then it come time to go to bed, and that's kind of strange. I didn't even kiss my wife when I got there because all the folks are there.
Yeah.
Back then, you didn't show any emotion around my wife's folks, and if you never lived through it, you don't know how it is. But I hadn't, I don't think I did even kiss my wife after I got there. And so her nephew, he's about 4 years old, and he got up in my lap and laid his head on my chest. It was exciting, let's put it that way. And
a lot different from what you had been dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, before I forget, I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us some of your story. Is there anything that, when you look back on your time in uniform, that you'd say you're most thankful for?
Well, I'm thankful for all my buddies I had, because we watched out for each other. And your buddy, they came first before anything else.
Did you lose any friends over there?
Yeah, but we never was like the infantry. They took care of us because we had the means of supporting them.
Yeah, they needed you guys and your protection.
And we needed them, too. But it was exciting, if you want to put it that way. One little incident. We went up the coast in Nice, France, and Monte Carlo, and Mentone. All those towns, we occupied them back to the, almost to the Italian border. You've heard of the 442 combat team?
Yep.
And 100th Battalion?
Right.
Well, we was with them over in France, and then they pulled them out and took them back to Italy. But anyhow, they were there with us. It was a guy come from, like, out of Monte Carlo in a rowboat, and he was trying to row across the bay to Italy where the Germans was. The Japanese American, they took a 50 caliber machine gun and climbed up on top of a building down there just north of Mentone, France, set this machine gun up and started firing at him and made him come to shore. It was a funny deal.
Yeah, busted. And
they were Japanese Americans.
So you served alongside the 442 in the 100th?
The 100th Battalion went with us in the gliders to France out of Italy.
And were you aware that a lot of those guys were fighting for a country that had their families locked up?
Not like I know about it now.
Yeah.
Back then, they were just in uniform, and they were Japanese Americans, and you didn't want to monkey with them. Of all the people, I think maybe that the Germans dreaded having to fight with those Japanese Americans, because they were really good.
Well, and they paid a heavy price.
They sure
did. A lot of losses.
They sure did. I imagine probably they paid the highest prices, men-wise, this probably as any outfit did. Putting this in animal deals, like you had a dog and you said, seek him. That's what you did for those Japanese, and they would not stop.
Go for broke. That was their motto. Mm-hmm. You proud of what you did?
Well, not proud. Not that way, but I'm thankful that I was able to go through it and then get back out of it. Whenever you have two crashes in a glider and live through them, I wouldn't want to go through it again, but I'm glad I did.
And we're thankful for what you've shared with us today. That's Vernon Martin, 92 years old. Check out what he looks like now and what he looked like in uniform at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks so much for spending this hour with us today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time for a decorated F4U Corsair pilot who will remind us again, as Mr. Martin did today, that freedom is not free.